Red Wolf knows why you are here. You must listen to the whispers of the wind, the rumors from the rivers, the murmurings of the mountain. Oh, and the people probably know a few things, too. Ask around.
Spoilers?
Check.
Mature language?
Check.
Should listeners be advised?
Check.
Welcome to the Marvel Superheroes Podcast. I'm Diablo Frank, and with me are...
The League Machine and...
Mr. Fix-It.
And today we're finally talking about Red Wolf. Do either of you guys have any prior experience with the character?
Nunchuck! No.
It's Hununchuck.
Oh, Nunchuck. My bad.
A Nunchuck?
Wrong universe, and you as a guy who hosts a comic book podcast should probably know that.
Yeah. Sarcasm.
My experience with Red Wolf is that we tried to record this podcast 3 years ago. So I read some Red Wolf material.
I don't think, we recorded a podcast involving the character Red Wolf, but we did not record a Red Wolf podcast. We recorded a Tiger podcast featuring Red Wolf.
Sounds like you're splitting hairs here, buddy.
Okay. So, but that's the only time you ever experienced the character either? Nowhere else?
I don't think so.
Are you familiar with the character having existed?
Yeah,
prior
for
to
sure.
That? Okay. But from what?
I just know there's a character named Red Wolf. I don't know if it was an Ohatmu. I don't know if it was, I don't know what it was.
Okay. Brief backstory, Red Wolf Zero, we'll call him, debuted in Rawhide Kid number 27, cover dated April 1962, created by Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, and Dick Ayers. That was just the first time that name appeared in a Marvel comic book. It was a crappy Western tale. The character was a villain. He was a low-rent villain. He got his ass whipped by Rawhide Kid. Doesn't really count. So throw that out right immediately. The original Red Wolf was created by Roy Thomas and John Buscema. Character's name is William Talltrees. You guys read his debut story in Avengers number 80. You want to tell some folks about that?
Sure. The issue starts off with Red Wolf trying to get revenge on some dude. Vision breaks it up, stops him, apprehends him, takes him back to the Avengers. Avengers are like, hey, what's going on? He says, hey, this dude was a goon for a land tycoon kind of dude. What was the guy's name?
Cornelius Van Lunt.
Van Lunt, that's what I was thinking of. Anyway, he was trying to buy land from Red Wolf's family.
He's a Cheyenne, I think.
Yep, they're Cheyenne Native Americans. And at the time, Red Wolf's sort of a adolescent, and they show him kind of like, he's not participating in the Red Wolf sort of ceremonies, but he's like peeping at them from a distance. Cause
yeah, he's very like anglicized, we could say. Boy. He's not really a part of the native traditions at that time, as I recall.
So then he goes off to war.
Vietnam War, we should point out.
He then goes to New York, works, he's like, you know, whatever.
In construction.
A riveter on skyscrapers, whatever. Comes back to the reservation and finds the Van Lunts are still trying to get the land from their father. Their father turns him down. He kind of interjects and is like, get the hell out of here, dude. So he's like, all right, fine. They leave and he comes back and they basically machine gun down the entire tribe of people.
Which is kind of Steel's origin, by the way. Sort of, kind of. There's a lot of parallels between him and John Henry Irons, of all people.
Weird.
He did have a negative view of Anglos because they tended to look down on him as a little Indian boy. And even in their society, they're seen as being more civilized and they're seen as being savages. Because he does kind of mention that that's kind of a chip on his shoulder while he's going through this.
Yeah, I probably misspoke. It's not that he's someone who embraces the modern world, but he doesn't really embrace Anglo culture.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they gun down his family or whatever. He's the only one that survives. So he goes and he takes up the mantle of Red Wolf.
Well, no, he's calling toward the spirit of Red Wolf and feels that nothing is happening and he's getting pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
And he dons on the ceremonial Red Wolf
get up.
Describe Red Wolf's appearance too, if you would.
He's kind of got like a loincloth thing and some boots and it's like the head of a wolf that he puts on.
Yeah, like
the... He's kind of got the chap type things though, because he's got exposed skin on the thighs. Mm-hmm. And then he's got the like the tan, I guess, riding pants or something.
Yeah, they're like chaps.
Moccasins.
Assless chaps, yeah.
He's got his war stick that he uses.
Tomahawk.
No, that's not a tomahawk. Oh, yeah, he has a tomahawk in the original comics. Yeah. That's right.
And so he goes into the desert angry because he wants revenge for his family being murdered. He's angry and all of a sudden the Red Wolf spirit comes out of the flame. And he's like, oh, you're here. You're going to help me. And he's like, I'm here, but I'm not here to help. And I guess he bestows upon him the power of Red Wolf. And
basically, what is the power of Red Wolf? Could you like define that? Or
I thought it was like super strength and speed.
Yeah, like enhanced senses.
Yeah.
You know, basic garden variety type stuff. Yeah.
he passes out, and then he wakes up and he's attacked by a female wolf, and she's weak, he's weak. He kills her. He feels horrible about it. As he starts to crawl toward a cave, he finds that she was defending her pup and says that that's a sign, like it's an omen.
And he names the pup Lobo, and the Lobo's his dog.
Yep. And then, of course, he's explaining...
His faithful companion.
He's explaining this to the Avengers, who at the same time are having issues because they're fighting an organization called the Zodiac. You have one part of the group that wants to go after the Zodiac. Then you got, like, Panther. Because you got Panther, Scarlet, Cap, Iron Man...
Goliath.
Atlas? I thought it was Atlas.
No.
What was it? He's not Goliath, or is it Atlas? I thought he was Atlas.
Which version was it? Which
it
character?
Like Atlas.
Well, because, you, Mac, you'd know better.
Sure it was Giant Man.
It should have been Giant Man back then, yeah.
I thought Giant Man looked... Well, anyway.
It was Hank Pym is Giant Man at that point, right? Or is that Hawkeye? Is Clint Barton... Yeah, Clint Barton is a Giant Man at that point in time. Maybe that's why you're thinking Atlas.
Okay. Well, anyway, so the Avengers are fighting because Panther thinks that they should stop fighting costume villains and take the fight to the streets, fighting the common criminal whose evils are penetrating civilization. Where Cap and them are like, the other group are like, no, we need to go after the Zodiac because it's a new group. And then apparently the Vision had quit the team right before this happened. Shows up and says, "What's up, dog? Got me a dog." And Red Wolf goes and tells him his story. And he's angry because Vision stopped him from getting his revenge, but his revenge was murder. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, that is one thing that was very distinctive.
Two wrongs make a right?
Yeah.
Makes you kind of question that.
Yeah. That is one thing that's very distinctive, though, is that this Red Wolf was a lethal vigilante. He was a killer, which was not something you saw a lot in Marvel Comics of that time period. This was 1970.
Oh, yeah. No, he was definitely going to kill that dude.
Well, he had already killed one of them, didn't he? I think he had killed
I think he was starting with this guy, I thought.
No, I think he killed one, and he was going after this one, because he was on the run, and he was upset, because now this one was going to get away. And he couldn't get a hold of him. And the Vision's like, "Well, I'll help you." But I think the Vision's kind of naive because he's thinking, "Oh, we're going to capture him and put him through, you know, the justice system." And I believe Red Wolf is like, you know, the white man's justice. Or I can't remember. Something along the lines of that. It's not his justice. He wants to put a tomahawk to his dude. The book ends up where all the teams are all splitting up. Like everyone's going in different directions. Pre-Civil War type thing.
Yeah. And you actually, did you finish the second part? Or y'all both skipped it, right?
I kind of skimmed through it. The one where Wanda, they think she dies because the gangsters shoot down their...
Yeah, it was a mess because they spent a lot of time in the first issue setting up the premise and who is William Talltrees and how did he get to this point in time. And you know, the story's called The Coming of Red Wolf. So you think, okay, this is going to be his spotlight story where he's going to be the Native American hero. He was the first Native American superhero at Marvel Comics and quite possibly in comics in general. But then in the second chapter, they totally lose the thread on that. They get all involved in the conflict between the two groups of Avengers, the ones who want to be more street level and the ones who want to keep battling cosmic threats. And they just peters out. They've captured Cornelius Van Lunt, and I think William Talltrees decides that he doesn't want to be a killer after all, farts away, and then it's over with. And then you don't see that guy again for years.
Wow.
So what did you all think of the story?
The first part was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I was really shocked. It was really good.
It's pretty succinct.
Yeah, John Buscema. Oof.
Yeah.
Tom Palmer was inking him by then too, yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. That's a great combination. I love that splash page too. That first shot of Red Wolf is pretty awesome because he looks super pissed.
Well, I love they do a really good job of keeping the shadow over his eyes all the time, but yeah, anyway. The costume, I think, is great.
Yeah, it's tricky because he's wearing a wolf head, very much like Jaguar God, or what is the name of the character from Fire and Ice, though?
Jaguar God.
No, but what's he called in the actual movie? He's not Jaguar God in the movie. Jaguar God's the Verotic character that was based on the painting.
I don't think they ever really give him a name in the movie.
He does have a name. I can't remember what it is. I don't know. Maybe I'll insert it in as a
there's Lar. Yeah. Big boobs.
But it's cool because it's difficult to pull off. You're wearing an animal skin on your head, but because of the way they played the shadows, it kind of works. He's got a, you know.
But in later Red Wolves, didn't he have like a tomahawk that would catch on fire?
I don't recall that.
Or is that a villain? Because
really...
there's a villain, right, that dresses in a headdress and stuff like that, that I want to say fought the X-Men at one time?
Yeah, I think it's a different guy. I don't remember that.
I think it has something to do with Warpath and all them.
Yeah, I don't remember that, no. So you guys might be wondering, though, why did I want to bring up Red Wolf, right?
Because you're like one-third Cherokee or something?
Oh, God, no. I'm trying not to fall into that particular white boy cliche. The first story I actually read of Red Wolf...
Now, that shit was bloody.
You know, it's 2017. You can identify with whatever you want. If you want to be 75% Chippewa, you can be 75% Chippewa.
To my recollection, my main introduction, because I think I was like you, I think, Mac, I think I had seen Red Wolf, and almost certainly I had seen him in the Handbook of the Marvel Universe. And I thought he looked really cool. I think he was drawn by Javier Solteres, and he had this neat-looking costume. It was a little bit different than the one we saw in the comics, because he had wolf fur that ran down his arms, and then were held by straps that had the cool like black and red zigzag pattern on it, as wristbands that held it in place. And then he had claws on his outfit. Mostly, though, the same. But he looked cool. I thought he looked kind of neat, so I think I remember remembered him from Ohotmu. And then when he turned up in Marvel Comics Presents number 72, which is most famous for being the first chapter of Weapon X, the Barry Windsor Smith origin story for Wolverine, which has been overwritten and restored so many times, but the basics of the story have remained true for the character. They've actually, I think, probably revealed too much about him, but everybody wanted to get a hold of this comic. And at this point in time, this is what, like, probably the last time I can remember a mainstream American superhero comic book anthology actually being a hot title, because everybody was reading Weapon X at the very least. But you also had this excellent Paul Gillespie drawn Shane of the She-Devil story arc.
I think I had that issue.
And in this particular issue, there's a Sandy Plunkett Daredevil story that's really great. That's a one-off. But then the last one is Flesh of My Flesh. Do you guys want to tell the story of this particular short, late-page number?
Mike?
It's basically all inner monologue, right?
Frank Miller-esque, I am one with the night. I am a force of vengeance kind of stuff. But
well, no. He's sad because Lobo's been killed by Bangle, the assassin. Lobo gave his life to protect Red Wolf. And so Red Wolf is basically talking about how they're one, they're brothers, they'll be one with each other again, which he kind
of... he strung up the body of Lobo and it's sort really of a crucifixy kind of thing.
Well, the first thing I saw, I thought it was a werewolf. I was like, oh shit, it's a werewolf. And then I'm like, oh no, it's a dead wolf kind of strung up like a human with his legs
kind of like a dream catchery looking thing.
Yeah, and so they're like the blood of our blood and he's cutting pieces of him.
Well, I think he's stabbing into the body and then cutting his own flesh to basically become... blood brothers with his deceased
he's like,
wolf.
He's like, Lobo, you were inside of me and stuff. I think a line this in there was very bizarre.
Yeah. And at the same time, there's these redneck hunters out there shooting all drunk. And apparently they're shooting pups.
Yeah, they find a wolf mother feeding her pups and decide that they want to do target practice. So they kill the mom first. And then as the puppies are scurrying away, they're driving around capping them off with their hunting rifles.
Which and is pretty graphic, too. I mean, they show their bodies being flung around by bullet fire, so...
They mitigated it somewhat by having it seen through the hunter's night vision sniper, so everything's already red. But you can still tell they're making bloody patches out of these pups.
And
well, he takes a couple shots, and then you just see like shattered glass.
Well, yeah, so what happens is the shots are heard by Red Wolf. He's out in a cave with the Lobo body, and he's kind of doing this whole ceremony. And then he says, I am the heart of anger, bringer of revenge. I am sky and land. I am man and beast. I am Red Wolf, protector of the Cheyenne people. I walk the land of my forefathers. I tread in the footsteps of pain. Enough is enough. And then, as you said, you see the sniper scope shatter because an arrow has been driven through the sniper scope by Red Wolf into the hunter's eye. And then he shoots out the tires of the truck, which gets to a halt just as he's like on a little like small ridge pulling back another arrow saying, they have torn my flesh, they have desecrated my land, Veho pigs, they will pay, which was like my money shot for that moment, man. I fucking love that moment. So then what happens?
I don't remember.
No. So like, does he kill? How many dudes were there total?
There was like five, I think.
Four total, I think.
Doesn't he like kill all these dudes except for two?
I don't know that he kills, no, but he definitely maims.
I honestly thought he killed him at first. So I'm like, holy shit, he's murdering people.
Well, I guess because the dude who got shot in the face with the arrow doesn't die because he's the one that comes back at the end, right?
Yeah. So it's like one of the guys, he's got his knuckle claws and he rakes this guy across the chest
dude,
with
right?
those.
I thought he killed that
and there's
guy.
Another guy he smacks in the face with a coup stick and he's cool too because he does like, he whips it from behind him and then he kind of whips it around and goes pop in the guy's face.
So they have the line like tracing where it moved behind him. Yeah.
And then in this particular version of the coup stick, it has a blade tip on one end and he's threatening the guy who is basically saying, come on guys, this is too much. And as he's threatening to stab this dude, the hunter who got shot in the eye turns up and is like, I'm going to kill you. And then the other hunter's like, no, this is ridiculous. I'm going to kill you if you kill him. Just put your rifle down. So... one-eyed hunter guy puts his rifle down and the dude's like, can't you see that? Put the gun down. Enough is enough. And then there's only one wolf cub left. And as the hunters are all walking away, so it's clear there's four living guys walking away from downed vehicle. Red Wolf picks up the pup and says, is this the way, Awayadara? Awayadara is the wolf god, by the way, that gives him his abilities. The way of anger and blood? No, this is the way of hope, the way of life. Lobo would have liked a little brother. I think he would have liked that a lot. And once again, the Native American sheds a single tear at the sight of the wolf pup that's going to replace his Lobo. So this story was by Fabian Nicieza and, again, Javier Solteres. Just as he had done with the Ohotmu entry, he makes Red Wolf look like a total badass, I thought.
Yeah.
And I just totally dug this story when I was reading it. I just thought he was just such a cool character. And the character actually had a number of spots in Marvel Comics Presents. My brother had actually bought this comic and I'd read his, but I went back and tried to find as many of those Red Wolf stories as I could and dug on those. Then at some point, point, I think one of the only times I managed to get to the original third planet, which was the first time I got to like a really huge comic shop, because as big as the comic shops that I had seen prior to that were, third planet at that time had to be like at least three times bigger than any shop I'd ever been in before. So they had this huge selection. And so I'm just trying to go through as much of this stuff as possible. I'm trying to find everything. And as I recall, I found an issue of the original Red Wolf, and it's like Red Wolf like against the night sky leaping at a dude. It's like, this is cool. I really like Red Wolf. Let me check this out. So I bought the comic and read it and dug it. And one of the things I loved about it was that it was a completely different creative team. Gardner Fox wrote it. Sid Shores drew it. And Sid Shores was usually an inker. He didn't really get to do a lot of penciling. He brought just such a great physical impact to everything that was happening. It looked like what would happen if you hit somebody with a stick. Or I think at some point, like a horse collapsed and a dude like went face first into the ground. And you just felt that bone crunching impact. So I thought he did a really nice job with that. But this was a completely different character. And I'll give you a little bit of backstory on this. So basically what had happened is, I don't know whose idea it was to bring in a Native American character into the Avengers story. It was probably Roy Thomas's, because he definitely was a guy who, both him and Stan Lee, both were had some fairly progressive causes for their time period. And around this time period was the American Indian movement, where basically Native American peoples were wanting to be recognized, wanting to get their land back. They'd been stuck on reservations for decades. They'd been denied a lot of basic rights. Obviously, their land had been stolen from them in the first place. All these treaties had been broken. So basically, they started protesting to get their stuff back, to reclaim all this stuff that had been taken from them and all these rights that had been denied them. All these people were like, fuck the Native Americans. They're not patriotic. They're bullshit, which sounds terribly familiar today. By the way, are you aware that Native Americans took over Alcatraz for like a year, right?
What?
Did you not know about this? I think it was sometime around like in the late 60s, early 70s. But basically, it was Alcatraz, is the island out off of the California coast, right? Where they had the prison?
Yeah.
Right. So they managed, they'd closed down the prison and it wasn't inhabited. So a large group of Native Americans decided they were just going to reclaim that land as part of a protest. So they just sent boats and boats of Native Americans to the island. They occupied it for like a year plus. They had all these, they were living there. They'd set up, you know, they were managing to get supplies there. Although the U.S. government did their best to cut off their ability to get these supplies. And they just occupied the prison for, you know, months and months. Obviously, that was a lot of notoriety to the American Indian cause that time period. Obviously, the culture reflected that a lot, too. You got to see things like Billy Jack on the big screen, where this guy who had possibly a dubious connection to Native American peoples, but portrayed a Native American who basically walked around and used martial arts that he'd learned in the military to kick the asses of the bad guys, kind of a walking tall kind of thing going on. Billy Jack was like a whole film series that has sort of a cult following. I'd have to check the years to see how contemporaneous that was to the Red Wolf story, since I think they were a little later in the 70s when that was happening.
Is that why Billy was the Native American guy in Predator?
For Billy Jack? Could be, for all I know. Like, Shane Black does strike me as the kind of guy who'd be into like cult cinema and such. So yeah, it wouldn't shock me. You know, of course, you had the famous Paul Revere and the Raiders song, Cherokee Nation, that was a big hit in that time period. So I think there's a lot of awareness, and probably Roy Thomas wanted to reflect that. I think John Buscema was the one who designed the character. And so they give him that two-issue start off in Avengers, and then it's cold for a while there. But around that same time, Stan Lee started pushing more inclusion in his comics. He saw that as sort of the wave of the future, something that they could help to capture market share and just morally justify it as well. So a lot of women characters suddenly got their own books, as we've discussed in the past, with characters like
The Cat,
but also African-American characters like Luke Cage, and in this case, Red Wolf. But Stan Lee didn't want to do a modern-day Native American superhero. Apparently, a lot of the old guard creators didn't want to have to do superhero books, and they really wanted to do Westerns. So Stan pushed to have this guy as a star of a Western series instead. They used some veteran talent. Again, Gardner Fox, who history goes back to the 1940s. He was a co-creator of characters like Hawkman, for instance. Didn't he co-create The Flash? Yeah, so anyway. And of course, he was the writer of Justice League of America and the co-creator of that concept. But basically, if I recall correctly, Gardner Fox was part of the group of writers at DC that tried to push to unionize, and DC decided that instead of tolerating this union that never actually even came about, they just fired all these old creators, specifically writers, to get rid of them. And so these guys were in the wind. That's how Gardner Fox ended up working over at Marvel. And I think that Roy Thomas, especially being a huge fan of Golden Age comics, especially being a huge fan of DC comics, and especially being a huge fan of Gardner Fox's DC comics, wanted to make sure to get this guy some work. So his veteran talent gets a hold of the Red Wolf series. It starts out, though, as a preview story in Marvel Spotlight number one. This came out in 1971, so it was just over a year after the original two-parters in Avengers. This This was, by the way, Marvel Spotlight number one, featuring a Neil Adams cover. Across the vast southwestern plains come the thundering hoofbeats of a million stallion, bearing on its back the legendary figure of that most dreaded of all Indian Awayadadas, the fabled Red Wolf. Death lies before him, death leaps behind him, and every man's hand is turned against this mighty warrior, whose heart beats to a distant drum. For Red Wolf is of both the red man's world and the white man's world, and the path he walks has no turning to either side. By the way, this first story was inked by Wally Wood, so that gave it that little extra polish to it. Yeah, I like Wally Wood stuff. So the basic origin story is that Red Wolf remembers how his legs were the swiftest, his swimming the best, his arrow ever the truest. Remembers how, as an untried child, he would curry the horses before a hunt and or a war party. But most of all, he remembers the wise old shaman, Many Moons, who had told a boy the old tales of the tribe and of the Awayadada, the wolf spirit, which had made his ancestor, the first Red Wolf, the mightiest warrior of all. Red Wolf it was who brought his people from the eastern forests, long and long ago, to this vast plains world where the black wind, the Ntichi Dijin, never blew. Red Wolf had tamed the first horse. Red Wolf had defeated the Kiowas, the Comancheros, the Sioux, so that his people might have a land to call their own. And now sorrow touches the heart of the cornered youth, for he also recalls that famous day when the Pony soldiers came with crackling rifles, his father falling in battle, his mother dropped before their teepee. And so basically these cavalry officers were coming in, they slaughtered everybody, they were going to kill young Red Wolf, but one of the captains decided to spare him, and they gave him to the first settlers that passed by who were interested in having a kid. These were the Wakelys, an elderly couple. So the Wakelys took this guy in, they raised him as their own son. They made sure to teach him the ways of farming so that he wouldn't be a savage, which they put in their own terms. Wakely was old enough and aware enough of his culture that he never forgot that, he never gave that up, and he never believed himself or his people to have been savages. But because of the kindness of the Wakelys, he decided not to fight them against their characterization and just try to continue to hold on to his heritage. So while he learned how to farm, he also made sure to keep up with his archery skills, his ability to throw a tomahawk, all that kind of stuff. So one day, once he was a young man, he goes into town to buy supplies. He comes back, and the night sky was red with blazing fire, and the shrieks of howling Indians filled the air. Renegades had come for his family, basically. He gunned them down with his revolver, but he was too late. His adoptive parents were dead, and their farm was burnt to the ground. So Wakely spends months rebuilding the farm from scratch, or at least the home from scratch. And then no sooner does he do that another damn land baron comes around and says, you know, sell me your house or I'll shoot you out of it. He refuses to sell the family farm, so they try to shoot him out of it. Instead, he ends up going after these men, capturing them, killing them. And then he swears to the night sky, Wakan Tonka, O great spirit, hear my plea. Give me vengeance over these, my enemies, on those who burned what these my hands have built. No, the way of the Great Spirit is not vengeful, and yet, white men slew my Indian parents, red men killed my white parents. Where shall I turn? Which way is mine? So ultimately, he decides to put on fringe shirts that guys, you know, they wore in the Westerns. Anyway, he dresses up, and he becomes a scout at one of the local forts, and he works under a fellow named Officer Brett Saber, who had debuted like a month earlier in Western Gunfighters number one, in a story I don't think I've ever been able to read. Yeah. It's funny, too, they even say, recall him from Western Gunfighters number one? It's like, fuck no, I can't find that damn comic.
Western Gunfighters number one?
Fighters, yeah. They think he might be a spy, but they decide to take him on as a scout. He proves himself to Saber as like the best scout they've ever seen, so they decide to make him lead scout immediately. The white guy who had been that scout was like, I'm not letting you take my job. And so he picks a fight with Johnny Wakely, and Wakely decides to throw the fight because he thinks that, you know, if he lets this guy establish dominance, that they won't see him as a threat and, you know, everything will be okay. But instead, they just have no respect for the guy, and he's sort of set up as a meek, mild Clark Kent of the plains, essentially. The Indians ultimately go on the war path. It's all over a white buffalo skin that's been stolen. It turns out that this evil shaman was in cahoots with some gun runners who were trying to start a war between the white and the red men so that they could sell arms to the native peoples to help facilitate the war and to line their pockets. Red Wolf uncovers this plot, and all the bad guys go to jail or end up dead. And then not too long after that, the spotlight proves successful, and the Johnny Wakely version of Red Wolf got his own series. Unfortunately, you read the letters columns, and there are a lot of people that are really happy that they had a Native American series out there. But it's the 1970s. Westerns times have really begun to pass from the popular culture. Unless you're doing like a Clint Eastwood type thing, people just don't want to see Westerns anymore. I think that there was such a glut of Westerns from like the 30s up through into the 60s that it just people were fed up with Westerns at that point. They wanted to see more modern stuff. So the Johnny Wakely Red Wolf only gets to be in 6 issues of this solo series before they decided to do a time jump. So they go to the 1970s, or as the cover blurb announces, now set in the Holocaust of today.
Good Lord.
So yeah, there was no like white flight, urban fear bullshit going on in this comic book. By this point, it's 1973. It's the same creative team, Gardner Fox and Sid Shores, but now with inker Jack Abel. And they introduced the modern-day Red Wolf, who is wearing basically the same outfit as the Johnny Wakely one, except that they kind of streamline a little bit, take away some of the ornamentation. And now instead of wearing a wolf head, he's wearing like more of a mask where there's actually eye slits where the wolf's eye should be. And he no longer has the snout of the wolf. It's just his own face to make it look more like a traditional mask. But because he's got the eye holes, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Hawkman there. So in this first story, there's a woman who's being attacked by some mobsters. Red Wolf manages to drive those guys away. The girl at first is wondering, you know, he's like, hey, I looked in your purse before I recovered it for you. You don't really have any money. Why were these guys after you? And she doesn't know, but she thinks what it is she has a letter that she found that relates a story about how, unbelievably enough, the original Red Wolf had apparently avenged the murder of like her great-great-grandfather after he had found a gold claim and was trying to bring gold back with him. Some renegades killed him. Red Wolf captured or killed, I can't recall, the renegades, and then decides to bury the gold with the body of the prospector so that if his family ever manages to make it out west, he will give them their gold back, which makes no goddamn sense at all. And then it proceeds to start recounting the same origin story from Marvel Spotlight. Admittedly, I don't know how much of the origin they had told in the original Red Wolf number one. I haven't reread that one in a long time. But if you're trying to set up the 1970s Red Wolf, why would you go back and retell the origin of the original one and take up a ton of important real estate in his comic book? But that's what they do. And so Red Wolf doesn't think that the mobsters would have any way of knowing that this letter was in her purse or would believe that they would be getting gold from some other state. He thinks that just doesn't make any sense. But she also has a camera with her, so he asks her to develop the film. And it turns out that while she was working for an anti-pollution group, she accidentally caught on film the murder of a man by these mobsters, so she had evidence that could put them away. Well, they were following either the girl or Red Wolf to manage to track her back to the apartment. They smash their way in. Red Wolf like grabs the girl, jumps out of a window, and they end up on the girders of a building under construction. Red Wolf uses their height to secure the girl while the mobsters have gone all the way down from the apartment building where she was in and are going up into the construction site via elevator. So he has a big battle with these guys on the skeleton of this building, beats the hell out of them without killing any of them. And then this girl, who you thought didn't have a lot of money, apparently manages to arrange for plane fare from New York City to Dallas so they could then rent a car for 2 weeks to drive to an old associate of the original of the Johnny Wakely Red Wolf. They're able to find like a cave where I guess is sort of like the Red Wolf library is this cave where all of his diaries and information about his adventures take place. They deduce where the grave is. They unearth the gold. What I especially love is this girl basically tells Red Wolf, after what you put it through, you owe it to me to get me, help me to find this gold. And it's like, bitch, he saved your life multiple times. Just because you got scared because he put you on top of this building doesn't mean he owes you a goddamn thing. But they unearth the gold. She offers some of the gold to Red Wolf. You'd think at least fucking 50-50 because he did all the actual fucking work. But he's like, no, I'm way too noble for that. I'm your magical engine who's going to just help the white person get to a better place instead of like doing anything for my fucking self. She lets her keep the gold and she's going to use it to help fight pollution. And this Red Wolf is like, I let her help bring back the days when the wind blew clean and sweet and when the rivers teemed with fish and the brook water was good to drink. If she can do this, then this adventure was well worth well, and her great-grandfather did not die in vain. And at the very end, Red Wolf appears to return to the cave. I think it might have been the cave where the Red Wolf Library existed, and he sees the Owayadata, the wolf spirit, who tells him, you know, hey, I want you to be the defender of my people just as your ancestor was before you. And so this Red Wolf appears in the last three issues of Red Wolf, but this Red Wolf is not William Talltrees, the one from the Avengers. This is a third Red Wolf named Thomas Thunderhead, who did have some additional superpowers. He could basically make his coup stick appear from thin air, and he could make Lobo appear from thin air. And Lobo, I don't know if he was a ghost wolf or what, but Lobo could become intangible now.
Ghost wolf sounds badass.
That is pretty cool.
You lost me with Thunderhead, and now I'm back with Ghost Wolf.
And why they would make an entirely new Red Wolf doesn't make a ton of sense, but there is a letter in here that I'd like to read through right quick that might give some insight. You tried, but you couldn't do it. You couldn't pull it off. Excuse me for that. Too many commercials, but it fits. You couldn't follow through with the concept of Red Wolf. At first, the idea seemed to be to make a new original hero of the Old West, an Indian torn between two races, trying to prevent a war that seems inevitable. But you are far off that track now. Red Wolf, once so promising, has slipped back into the stereotype mold. A pity indeed. In the beginning, the art and story were superior to any Western I've ever read. What have you done to Johnny Wakely Red Wolf? He has a mild-mannered secret identity, a woman problem, a redhead and a brunette, how original, and an arch-villain of whom I'm sure we have not seen the last. The storylines are becoming thin and one-dimensional. Red Wolf sees villain, villain escapes, Johnny Wakely goes to Colonel Saber for aid, Red Wolf captures or kills the Heavy. What depth and excitement. Come on, Marvel. I care about this strip, otherwise it wouldn't matter to me. Even as it is, Red Wolf is still one of the top Western strips around, but when I think about how much better it could be, and the editor's reply, we recognize, probably even a bit before you did, that we were straying from the original concept of the Old West Red Wolf strip, and so we began to ask ourselves, why. The result, we arrived at some pretty startling answers. First, what we had was a good premise for the strip, but also a highly limiting one. We could only present so many Red Wolf averts the Indian War in the Nick of Time stories before readers and writers alike grew tired of him. As a kind of compromise, we opted for a more standard Western tale, but of course with the Indian as hero, thus maintaining the theme of tension between the races as an integral part of the series. But the two forms never quite seemed to mesh the way we had hoped they would. And that's the story behind the issue you now hold in your hands. Undoubtedly one of the most offbeat unusual Western tales ever devised, and the issue that marks a major turning point in the Red Wolf strip. Starting now, you'll be reading the adventures of Johnny Wakely's contemporary counterpart in the pages of this mag. We hope you found this transition issue as unique and entertaining as we did, okay? You've presented us with a question we hadn't even considered, namely, now that Red Wolf is indeed a modern-day strip, should he have a costume? Some sort of futuristic, stylized version of the traditional Indian garb? It's poll time again, Marveldom assembled. What do you think? Do we keep the 1970s Red Wolf as he appears in this issue, or do we give him a jazzier set of threads? Skins, actually. We predict a major controversy on this matter, which is precisely why we're dumping it in your laps. Go to it, Feral Files. We're waiting for your decision. By the way, this issue calls the character the Wolfhead Warrior many times, and I thought that was a neat little term for the character. So again, maybe this doesn't answer why I want to talk about Red Wolf. There's several reasons for this. Number one, though, is I enjoy these stories, and I'd also, for years, been playing with like action figures and coming up with my own little stories that I wanted to tell. I basically had my own little like X-Men team that I was wanting to put together, and I realized that Chris Claremont had been writing X-Men for years and years and years, and I was never going to get to write Wolverine because that was Chris Claremont's book, and nobody else was ever going to write X-Men but Chris Claremont. So I was like, okay, so if I ever got to write for Marvel, who could be stand-ins, who could be analogous to the characters that I'd been doing that were themselves basically Scott, Jean, Logan, that kind of thing. And after reading that really violent Marvel Comics Presents story and reading these older Western stories and also having come up with stories involving, I had what became a Native American hero who had a version of himself in the past and a version of himself in the future. So I was like, wow, it's all kind of right here with Red Wolf. This could be the parallel for my character, my Wolverine type guy. So I probably invested in Red Wolf more than would be normal, especially because I think that Native Americans to some degree are overrepresented in comic books, because we've had a lot of Native American heroes, even though Native Americans represent a tiny, tiny portion of the population. But at the same time, given the historical shafting that Native Americans have gotten, and given the fact that I have Native Americans in my own family, I think they should probably have a hero too, and I just would like them to be better heroes, because one of the problems that Red Wolf has is a problem that a lot of minority heroes had in the 1970s, is they wanted to try to to do more realistic comics, try to better represent the world that they saw outside their window. And so they're creating all these minority heroes and female heroes and stuff. One thing they forgot to do is, because they were trying to be so realistic, they made everybody sort of street level. The Cat was very street level. Shane the She-Devil was just another jungle goddess. Night Nurse was a nurse who got involved in adventures, but really nothing that spectacular. Luke Cage is one of the most powerful of the minority heroes from that time period, and all he's got is the Steelheart skin and the superhuman strength. That's it. And then Red Wolf has a vague set of slightly heightened abilities over normal human beings. This guy's supposed to be the Native American superhero. He's probably one of the most high profile ones that Marvel has ever had. He's their first one. And especially when you try to update him as they do here, he kind of sucks. He doesn't have any real kind of powers. He's running around bare chested, looking completely anachronistic. And he doesn't do anything particularly cool, especially once they take the Western tropes and move them into the present day. He just seems like a sad sort of Black Panther, Daredevil kind of character. They're not really doing anything spectacular with this guy. And I don't think I'm the only one who saw it, because then we move on to Red Wolf number 4, which would be the character that appeared in the second Hercules miniseries. You want to talk a little bit about that one?
He shows up in the midst, what is this, issue number 2 of the 4-issue Hercules limited series, written, drawn by Bob Layton.
Prince of Power from 1984. What Bob Layton has said is that the reason why the character appeared in the Hercules miniseries is because he had tried to get a Red Wolf limited series greenlit, and Jim Shooter had shot it down, so he decided to adapt his concepts and put it into the Hercules miniseries instead.
I don't think I ever read this miniseries. Are they in the future?
Yes, they are in the far future.
Okay, gotcha.
Because I actually bought Hercules number 1 when I was a kid, but I didn't buy this one because while I liked it, I didn't like it enough to stick with it.
So did Bob Layton write?
Yes, he wrote and drew it. I think he did all the full creative tours. Didn't he ink it as well?
Yeah, I think so. Because the next person listed on the roll call is a letterer. Rick Parker, letterer. It takes place in the future, and I guess Hercules is hanging out with a Skrull, and then what do they call these?
Which
things?
Is kind of interesting, too, because when he's introduced in the first issue, he appears as a beautiful white woman, as I recall correctly. Hercules lusts for this person, and then because of his sexual harassment is why the Skrull revealed himself to be a male Skrull. And so after Hercules kind of freaked out over that a little bit, he decided he liked Skippy the Skrull, too, and he kind of became a sidekick for that second miniseries. Alongside Recorder, who used to hang out with Uatu, and he's just this robot who records stuff and makes observations, and he's one of those cool robots where he always tells you what he's going to say before he says it, like what type of sentence it's going to be and stuff.
Statement, conclusion. Yeah, yeah. They're getting into some trouble, but it breaks away from that story, and they're on a ship, and this guy comes out, and his name is Banak, and then he comes on board the ship, and it's almost like he's talking to some union, Local 27, Cybernetic Tech Union. Wants Banak. So he's saying, hey, just everybody know, I've been visiting all the ships in the area, and it looks like I'm going to have the vote. I'm going to be president. And they're like, oh, great. Woo, Banak. That's dope. And then in the back of the room, one of the workers, Rojan Smythe, right? He starts having like a nervous breakdown, and he's like, no, 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 not here. No, what the hell's going on? And out of nowhere, a guy who is Red Wolf, spoilers, he says, Skrull, we have seen through your disguise, you shall not escape the vengeance of the Red Wolf. And he shoots Banak with this like big staff he has and kills him.
And can you describe that Red Wolf?
He is, he's got
swole.
Like, yeah, he's huge. He's got metallic gloves on and like a metallic half armor.
Part of his arm is exposed and a chunk of his thigh is exposed.
And he's got like a Magneto style helmet with horns so that it comes over and it covers his cheeks, but his mouth and the eyes are exposed.
White fur collar, wolf fox sort of symbol on his chest.
And then he's got gloves. So around his neck, he's got fur. At the bottom of his gloves, he's got fur. And then around the tufts of... He's sort of like these weird... The boots go over his knee, but the tuft of fur is like in the middle of him. Very, like a around calf. A calf. Yeah. It's very strange.
He kind of looks like one of the Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, I could see that.
Another thing that's interesting about that particular panel, too, where he's first introduced, is I remember in Marvel Age Magazine, they did an article on comic book coloring and character design. And basically, they had something like 20 different versions of that stat image with different color variations of different ways they could have colored the costume with wild variations of it. So it was memorable for me.
Or, you know, Hercules gets arrested. He's locked up with...
Skippy the Skrull?
No. Hercules? No. With Red Wolf. Because they shoot Red Wolf and he turns back into his... what is the dude's name?
Rojan Smythe?
Rojan. At some point, Hercules gets locked up with Rojan and they're sort of talking and he explains to Hercules that he was like a space traveling Indiana Jones style where he goes and he just goes down to these planets and he looks for shit. So he comes to this planet that is completely vacant and he can find nothing but like wolf bones. So he's like, obviously there were some sort of like wolf people.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds this giant, and Skrull bones. Those were the two bodies he finds. So he finds like this huge sort of wolf-headed palace and he goes inside where he's approached by, you know, some sort of spirit that tells him, look, we need revenge and you're going to be our vessel of revenge. So basically the spirit of this, what is the name of the...
Owari Dada?
I thought there was a name of the race of people, though.
Oh, okay.
Not seeing it. Anyway, they just basically say that they're going to, their wolf god is going to inhabit his body, and he's going to be their vessel for revenge. So whenever he's around, he sees Skrulls, he's going to have the ability to sniff Skrulls out, no pun intended. And then when he does, he will then transform into the Red Wolf and execute them.
So this guy's totally going to be in the Captain Marvel movie. He's going to be like their secret weapon.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Can't wait for this guy to join the cinematic universe.
But it's very Incredible Hulkish, where he hulks out into Red Wolf and then, you know, turns back.
Once the Skrull's dead, he's back to normal, yeah.
So anyway, around that time, Hercules' buddy, who happens to be a Skrull, pops up. And this dude instantly turns into Red Wolf and breaks out of their jail cell, going after him. So Hercules kind of has to start fighting the dude off. And in the process of that, they knock a hole in the ship and it sucks them both out. And instead of Hercules letting Red Wolf get sucked out into space and die, he pulls him in and saves his life. And he was like, well, look, I just saved your life. You owe me. So don't kill my Skrull buddy. So he's like, okay. That's sort of the end of it.
And even though the character appears in successive issues, it's only as a part of a recap of the previous issues. For some reason, they're always pushing like, yes, his story continues for all three issues. Like, no, they're just referencing this. This character doesn't appear again outside of those flashbacks. So then we move on to Red Wolf 5. This character was called Wild Run, created by Mark Gruenwald and Herb Trimpe. He was in 1992's Fantastic Four Annual number 25. And I don't know if you remember, there was actually a two-page spread of these characters drawn in that sort of like pseudo-Rob Liefeld sign. These are all characters from throughout Marvel history that have been drawn in to become Kang's personal guard. This is supposed to be the original Red Wolf, the one that started the line. And he works for Kang, and he even appeared in, I seem to remember you read Avengers Forever, didn't you? The Kurt Busiek, Carlos Pacheco, Maxi series?
The one that got into all the Kang shit.
Right.
Yeah.
This Wild Run character was a part of that, so I guess you'd have had familiarity through that. You don't remember Avengers Forever?
Yeah, I actually got it somewhere, but I don't remember
it. Were you reading it or were you just collecting it?
I think I read it.
It was just too dense though, right? Too much stuff going on at the end.
It was very, very crazy, yeah.
So Wild Run apparently popped up for a number of years afterwards, at least through those story arcs. Then we progress to Red Wolf 6.
Jeez.
Tell us a little bit about the recent Secret Wars maxi series. Didn't you read Secret Wars?
Mm-mm.
You read a bunch of the spinoff books.
Yeah, they read the spinoff books.
So what were those spinoff books? You know, not necessarily the titles, but what were they about, roughly?
Like, what if Doom pulls together a war planet, and each of these pieces of different worlds come together, and there's a mixture of their inhabitants. And so each of them is either magic or this or that, and he creates a force of Thors that are like his armed guards.
Yeah. So, but this war world is a lot like the one that the Beyonder constructed for the original Secret Wars, where in the Beyonder's case, there were pieces of different planets, all created to form a mosaic world. But in the modern version of Secret Wars, it was different dimensions and from the multiverse.
I think so.
And so in one of those worlds was, what if the Marvel superheroes that existed in the Old West? I believe the specific miniseries was 1872. And that miniseries actually starred the new Red Wolf, the currently active one, who was created by Jerry Duggan and either Nicole Varela or Doc Shaner. I've heard different versions about who designed this version of Red Wolf. You've seen him. What did he look like to you?
Typical Native American warrior. He was the sheriff.
Yeah, I thought he looked like Lisa Bonet circa 1990. Kind of looks like a cowboy, but he's got like kind of like a circular hat and weird sort of ornamental.
Kind of like Johnny Depp from what was that movie, The Lone Ranger?
Oh, yeah? Okay, he didn't have the war paint on, that's true, the white war paint. Yeah. So in the miniseries, what happens is he's trying to blow up a dam that was controlled by Roxxon in the Old West. He's almost lynched by some men working for the Wilson Fisk of that time period, but he's saved by Sheriff Steve Rogers, who insists that even if this guy is a criminal because he blew up this dam or whatever, he still is going to face justice. But Fisk keeps sending men to come get this guy, including Old West versions of Elektra, Bullseye, Grizzly. So they managed to actually assassinate Sheriff Steve Rogers. And so the Black Widow, who of that time period, who hated the Native Americans because they had killed her family or something, was still so offended by what had happened to Steve Rogers that she protects Red Wolf, and they team up to get vengeance and end up killing Fisk and a bunch of other people. Now, Red Wolf himself was too honorable. He basically sort of walks in Captain Sheriff Rogers' footsteps, where he's very moral and he's not willing to kill Fisk, even though he's committed all these crimes because he wants him to face real justice. Black Widow is less concerned about that sort of thing. And so ultimately, Red Wolf becomes the sheriff of the town. He's working alongside a steampunk version of Tony Stark and a bunch of other characters as well. And then after the Secret Wars event miniseries, he actually got his own short-lived series set in modern times. And how does that occur, though?
Well, from the issue you gave me, he is teleported. He's fighting somebody with current tech on him. That was that one, yeah.
Yeah, this one, it came out in 2016, written by Nathan Edmondson, drawn by Dalibor Talahic.
And he's just a sheriff of a small western town where all these people are starting to be killed by these lightning bolts that strike them in the chest. And the current folks there think that the Native Americans are doing it. And he's trying to defend his mom and at the same time trying to figure out what happened, what's killing these people. And he's attacked by somebody, but I don't know which villain it is. But they're blasting him with future tech. There's even they find a trail and it has a boot print, a military boot. And so that's as far as I got on that one.
Yeah, because kind of the theme we're working from here is it's the coming of Red Wolf. So we're looking at the first appearances of the character. Because the current Red Wolf appeared in a miniseries, I didn't want you to have to read an entire miniseries. So that's why I kind of synopsized that and just had you read Red Wolf number one. Unfortunately, that series didn't last very long. And that character has since appeared in a book called Occupy Avengers, which, as you can guess, is sort of like the social justice warrior Avengers, wow. Which I don't recall if it's still ongoing or not. The last time I checked, it was more of a duo. It's Red Wolf teamed up with Hawkeye, and they're traveling around the country sort of like hard-traveling heroes, the way that Green Lantern and Green Arrow did back in the 70s, going to areas that are underserved by superheroes and helping those communities with their low-rent superpowers. There are six incarnations of Red Wolf, spanning from the caveman days to the far future, with probably many more besides. We have three unresolved Red Wolves active in the current days, because we don't know whatever happened to the Thomas Thunderhead version, because he never appeared after the end of the original Red Wolf series. We still have William Talltrees. Talltrees is the one that's had the most complete history, because he continued to appear in the 80s, the 90s, even in the 2000s. He was actually part of a team called the Rangers that fought the Hulk years back, based in Texas. I think the only Texas-based Marvel superhero team in existence, which we're so proud of. When they did the Civil War and the 50-state initiative, the Rangers were the official heroes of the state of Texas, and Red Wolf was a part of that team. Fairly recently, he was even in the Scarlet Spider series that came out a little while ago, which was set in Houston, Texas.
The motherfucking H.
There's three Red Wolves around right now. None of these guys have been killed off or anything. Actually, to my recollection, no version of Red Wolf has been killed off explicitly. We don't know for a fact that Johnny Wakely even died, although it's intimated that he lived to a reasonably old age and then passed away in the Red Wolf series when they picked back up with Thunderhead, who unfortunately isn't even named in his first appearance. So the safe assumption would have been that he was Will Talltrees, and I still don't know whether that was intentional on Gardner Fox's part, or he just didn't know that there was a modern Red Wolf that had his own identity. But you've got a character with this sprawling history spanning the entirety of the Marvel Universe. As a little bit put off because Marvel recently did their Caveman Avengers.
Yeah.
You guys familiar with that? And when I saw the Black Panther of the Caveman era, he has the wolf head on his head as well. At first I thought, are they doing Red Wolf? Oh, it's Black Panther. Okay, well, that's not so much disappointing because I like that there's a Caveman Black Panther too, but Red Wolf really should have been in there since that character has been so well established to have such a broad history.
Wait, Caveman Avengers?
Yeah, that's a thing.
And the Ghost Rider rides a mammoth.
Yeah, woolly mammoth.
Telling you again, don't fucking talk about how shitty 90s comics are. I don't want to fucking hear it. I don't want to hear it. Sorry, I don't give a shit. You've got fucking Caveman Avengers. Shut the fuck up.
And it's a whole team too. I don't remember who else is on the team.
Well, obviously Black Panther.
Yeah, Ghost Rider, as you said, isn't there a proto Hulk on there?
I don't remember.
Is it anything reverse? Like we're Hulk is super smart and the rest of them are all caveman and dumb.
I don't recall well enough, but it just so happens that there are counterparts to a bunch of Marvel modern heroes in caveman time. And I don't think they have has the comic actually come out yet, or is it still something they're promoting?
I will take 1,000 pouches
over caveman Avengers.
1,000 over caveman Avengers and Spider-Gwen, okay?
But Spider-Man has a great costume, though. You have to admit.
I don't give a fuck.
It's a great costume. What the fuck? Stupid name,
what
though.
What is the name Spider-Gwen? This is a stupid... Or
well,
fucking,
I think she's
or,
supposed
or how about
to...
how they have to recast every character as a Deadpool variant?
Yeah, Gwynpool.
Oh, I forgot Gwynpool was a thing. Yes. Thank you very much.
Or the zombie head from Marvel Zombies who flies around with a propeller helmet.
10,000...
Lady Deadpool, 10, Kid
10,
Deadpool.
10,000 pouches. I'm 10... Quappling down. I want 10,000 pouches on a character.
Well, at least Deadpool is supposed to be a parody where Caveman Avengers is we're
canon.
That's supposed to be straight. Yeah, we're supposed to play that straight, really?
No, I did like the look of the Caveman Ghost Rider riding the mammoth on fire.
It's amusing.
It's
a
really cool look.
It's just probably maybe should have been in not brand X and not in an actual Avengers story arc. I wish, for starters, I do kind of wish they would pick one and stick with him. And I think it should be Will Talltrees, not just because that's the main one that I have affection for, but also just because he's the one who is the first one. He's the one who has the most stories to his name. He's the one who has the richest canon. And in fact, I want to revisit the character in the future. But considering that we still haven't done the Tigra-Red Wolf combo, which you'll note features a Skrull, spoilers. So you have all this kind of weird, funky history all tied into each other. But I'd love to see that Marvel do Red Wolf, but I really do wish they would follow the advice that they were given back in the 70s. Let's actually do a character who wears clothing, who isn't running around half naked. Let's not have him do a bunch of like stereotypical stuff. I do think you have to keep the acoustic though, just because I love staying acoustic for starters, but also that was such a big part of all the versions of the character. But maybe give it some powers.
I think it would be cool with supernatural, some kind of supernatural
how do you make him not a pussy?
Yeah. I reference this every now and again, but that Jan Michael Vincent movie where he's dealing with all the Native American spooky ass fucking supernatural stuff with the cool jacked up masks and shit. It'd be cool to have Red Wolf get involved with that sort of supernatural stuff. Maybe tie him into some of the great creatures of myth from the Alpha Flight stories that were also...
The Wendigo and all them.
Yeah, well, not just that, but specifically in Alpha Flight, they had these weird monsters from the First Nations mythology that Shaman and Talisman used to fight and stuff. So get him involved in that kind of stuff so that he's not so much like in the Daredevil Black Panther mode.
Yeah.
Really dig into the supernatural elements. Give him some real powers. Put the man in some fucking clothing.
When you gave him that stuff to read, I thought that's the direction they're going to go in.
Which stuff?
The Red Wolf stuff we're reading.
The new one, though?
No, any of it. I was waiting for it to go like in a supernatural direction.
Yeah, because they keep bringing back the wolf god, the Wyandotte, and then they don't do anything with it because he's got bullshit powers and he's running around dressed like a stereotypical Indian dude from like a Western from the 1930s, but he's jumping around on gurneys in the 1970s. Like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Just do a real superhero.
Maiming people with hatchets. Just going to town with that hatchet.
That really comes into play in the late 80s and 90s stories. I'm actually looking. I think you guys will enjoy those when you get to check those out in the future. But this episode has been so long in coming that I'm just happy to finally get Red Wolf done.
It's so fucking weird that, like, contemporaneously there are different Red Wolves going on.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand why they felt the need to do the Red Wolf that's running around currently. They had to transplant him from the 1800s from another dimension to this. In comics, we talk a lot about what Frank Miller and Alan Moore have wrought as far as like stuff in the 1980s was on the vanguard and today is just the most wretched of cliches, and especially the darkening and the need to make things so super serious and so super realistic. But I think we need to talk a little bit about the dark legacy of Chris Claremont as well, and shit like having multiple versions of the same character from different eras and different realities all hanging out together at the same fucking time. That shit just drives me up a fucking wall. I can't stand the X-Men these days where old man Logan's hanging out with teenage temporally displaced Jean Grey. It's like, just get the fuck out. Tell a fucking story that makes some fucking sense. Marvel, it seems like they looked at Crisis on Infinite Earths and decided to do it in the opposite direction and make their continuity so fucking complicated. Why is the 1800s Red Wolf that was introduced in 2016 running around in his own series with no fucking powers, dressed as a cowboy, shooting fucking six shooters? Why do you think, like, on the cover itself, they even have like what looks like a superhero costume, and the dude never fucking puts this shit on. He looks like kind of like a badass, sort of like
Metal Gear Solid
fucking ninja dude or some shit. Fucking do that shit with Red Wolf. Why is he still running around dressed like a dude? Or worse yet, dressed like one of the village people, where it's like some bullshit variation on Native American stereotypes but slightly modernized. I like this character. I think there's a lot of cool stuff with this character. Obviously, I've invested a lot in this guy over the course of like 30 years of first investigating him because he had a cool story, and then investigating him because I thought that he would be like a way for me to plug my own ideas into Marvel, which is something I have no aspirations for these days. But I just think he's a cool guy, and I think that the Native Americans should have at least one really cool hero at Marvel that's kick-ass badass, and I don't think it's Shaman or Talisman or Flamebird's in Latina. That's right. Never mind.
Warpath? He died?
Yeah. I mean, the big legacy of Thunderbird is that he died, and then his brother's still hanging out. And Warpath's okay, but he's all right. I like Warpath okay, too. But, something that Marvel would actually have full rights to, though, because Warpath, technically, I think, matter of fact, that's right. He's in The Chosen. I forgot. I don't know if it's I think it's Thunderbird that's in The Chosen, though. You know that new Fox show?
Yeah,
he's on that. He's the tracker.
Of course. Stereotypical.
Well, what's funny, again, I'm watching Inhumans.
Let me guess, he's really good at casino games, too.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I gotta cut that shit out. I'm watching Marvel's Inhumans, and I started watching The Gifted as well, and they both have characters with these tracking abilities, and like this group that's trying to track down this group, and it's like in like 10 minutes of The Chosen, it was already way better than what they ever did with the Inhumans, and probably in part because Thunderbird's in it, so that's something.
Wait. So wait, how did you guys say he should not be a pussy?
What do you mean?
So what do you do with this character to make him not be a pussy?
I think you lean into some of the supernatural stuff. You give him some superpowers. You make the acoustic have some kind of magical powers. And you let him kick more four ass. I don't care what powers, maybe give him a healing factor. Maybe, you know, Wolverine. Just like the idea I had in the first place is you make him a Native American Wolverine so that Marvel could have their own Wolverine that's not owned by Fox.
I mean, you don't want to get stupid like Brave Star or some shit like that.
Right. Well, that's why you get away from. Here's the thing. There's a lot of unintentional racism because I think that Gardner Fox did a lot of research for his Red Wolf series. But like when he tries to update it, he's like, well, you know, in these modern times, we have the whites and the reds and the yellows. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ. You know,
somebody wheel grandpa back into
right. The fact that you have this very stereotypical Tonto type dude running around in modern times, bare chested. I think that they had the best intentions, but their assumption of what would be a positive representation of Native Americans is sort of appalling today, which is why there's a big uproar. I don't know if you remember, we actually talked about this in one of the earlier episodes of the podcast where they were showing Marvel Now and showing all these new characters that were going to be coming out at Marvel. And they showed Red Wolf bare chested with a bow and arrow and everybody went like, what the fuck are you guys doing? And that's how we ended up with this cowboy version of Red Wolf because they were trying to clean up their act and do something else besides that. But yeah, I mean, just give them some decent fucking powers and let them kick a little bit more ass. Give them some villains that aren't completely ridiculous and just take advantage of the fact that dude's called Red Wolf.
Two words. Herald of Galactus.
Maybe a little too much power.
No, I think it'd be fucking awesome.
Actually, why don't we have him hunting Skrulls? That'd be like, actually, like, instead of it being some bullshit where he's like, it's the red man versus the white man, how about the red man versus the green man? You know, have him, that'd be something that you wouldn't see coming, but it's canon between the future Red Wolf and the story with Tigra is that he's like a Skrull hunter.
It turns out the dude that killed his family was actually like a Skrull disguised as a guy, and they were actually trying to set up some covert Skrull base they needed.
Maybe not so much that, but maybe he's like investigating government corruption, and then he uncovers like the V aliens essentially, but instead of being V, it's Skrulls. And so he's the Skrull hunter.
On Earth.
And yeah, and he's got to defend the actual Earth because maybe the Skrulls are plotting some extinction level event. And so he's the only guy who's hip to the fact that the Skrulls have infiltrated our government again. And he's killing them
like,
off.
Like maybe
you actually can do a matrix.
He can see through their disguises or some shit.
Right, right.
Like exactly. They live. Like yeah. Fucking like they live.
Yeah, like fucking they live.
Yes, like fucking.
And again,
they live.
Like they live. Or
now
like
I'm
the
getting
matrix,
lathered up.
Since he's the only guy who sees it, and they're of course going to be taking on these authority figures. So you have him killing evil Skrull cops and evil Skrull government figures and evil Skrull feds and evil Skrull corporate types. No, he's not killing real authority figures, but you're totally getting off because he's killing off authority figures.
Yeah,
like
because
Neo used to do.
Skrulls have infiltrated the government that high.
But so do we see potential in Red Wolf, and we think that Red Wolf deserves to be the Native American hero that Marvel and his people need.
Look,
like
man, but here's the problem.
Story.
The problem is the name Red Wolf.
That's a badass name, though.
Red.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I get the red part. But that's the thing, too, is...
Although, I guess if you can have Black Lightning, you can have Red Wolf, I guess. I don't know.
Black Panther.
Except that usually the word red is used more of a...
Just as long as you don't actually... Because he's literally colored like pink red in these 70s comic books. And you really kind of need to not do that. But I think you can get away with Red Wolf as long as you don't lean so much into all these bad John Wayne era stereotypes. Like, he should not look like the guys that get killed at the fort, you know, in every Western for like 30 years straight. Well, I thought that we had caught up on our mail, but I was sadly mistaken. And then I wasted hours one night compiling a bunch of comments only to lose all those efforts. So we won't be covering the mail this time. We will likely not be covering it next time either because the next episode will be the Black Panther movie. So the time after that, I'm afraid. By the way, if you're interested in hearing me talk a little bit more about Black Panther comics rather than the movie itself, I'll be appearing on Ryan Daly's Fire and Water podcast, FW Presents, where we're going to look at the Black Panther of the Klan story arc. That one's going to be a doozy. I'm figuring you're probably not surprised by that. So we got Google Plus Ones on the Ragnarok, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Infinite Crisis, and Luke Cage Season 1 episodes from Keith G. Baker, reminding me that Google Plus is still a thing. Facebook likes came from Derek William Crabb, Ali Batts, and DeBeige. Twitter likes came from Audrey Longman, Backseat Directors, Bob Buster, Bronze Age Babies, Chris at Bat Books for Beginners, Comic Book Vault, Derek and Matt Podcast, DGC Studio, Studios, Dwight L. McPherson, Dirk Ashton, Ed Moore at Marvel Bronze Age, Teal Productions, and Urban Fantasist, Ava Zarnicka Art, Good Times, Great Movies, Gord Tolton, Gregory Litchfield, Is It Funny Though, Jasper's Outfits, Jeffrey Brown, Jerry Whitworth, Jim Esquivel, Mike Me Audio, Nerdvic Strangers, Patrick and Dennis, Podcast Radio Network, Relatively Geeky, Sean Merrick, The Sheep Professor, Sully 17 Jr., or J&R, Terrence Castanguay, Tyson Jeffrey, Walrangian Vigilante, Willie Arbro,
and the One on One Warrior for Peace podcast. We got retweets from Between the Pages, Comic Reflections, Firestorm Fan, Kyle Binning Likes Comics. Kyle's a new father, and his babies are having kind of a rough time getting their start in the world. Please send him your best wishes and prayers. Martin Gray, Siskoid, and Talk Nerdy to Me podcast. Finally, the Mary Marvel Marching Society, 20th Century Geek, 108 Saved, Ali Bats, Batted Shapira, Biko Django, Blue Girl, Bobcat at Bum Wine Bob, Bone Dragon Comics, Brody's Kitchen, Caroline Wells, Cash Flag, The Cinebud Podcast, Comics in the Golden Age, Eric Mannix, Van Holes Podcast, Good Times Great Movies, Graphic Novelism, History of Comics on Film, I Am Grant Richter, Joe Crawford, Just in Time with the JNT Baggers Podcast, Justice First Dawn, Keith G. Baker, E-Man and the Master of the Universe Podcast, Pietro Blacksmall, Celadon's Penultimate, The Pod Stuff Podcast, Rad Adventures Podcast Network, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Sassy Animal, Silver and Gold Podcast Network, Steve Sellers, The Two Snaps Podcast, and Yo Art. And finally, joining the Hall of Fame is Glenn Walker. May he rest in peace.
The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. Views expressed in this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
I'm being serious. Why? Why couldn't you do that?
No.
That's too much of a stereotype, but having a guy named Red Wolf running around with a tomahawk or a whatever thing, whatever acoustic. You call it, acoustic, well, because you like to say it, it's good. Oh, that gets touchy, doesn't
it? That's, I'm like, I
but
see
then I kind of like when he starts butchering these dudes with hatchets and shit, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, that's fucking.